The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Answering your top financial questions for the past 20 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Glad you are with us today. Both myself and my co-host here, Pat, we are both financial advisors. Spend our weekdays with people like yourself as their financial advisors. We come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. Certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant, certified fund specialist. Essentially, this is what we do.
We work with people, though, like yourself. Real world, not theoretical. See lots of different situations involving people and money. And most of the time, it's the people. It really is.
What's that supposed to mean?
What's it? It's the people that everyone has a different view, and how they approach money is different. Oftentimes in both the husband and wife. But we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the complexities of retirement planning, and we're going to talk to you.
Yeah. We got a great program lined up. We really do. And one of the things we'll talk about during the show today is, when does it make sense to roll your 401k to an IRA? And when does it make sense to leave it where it is? Most advisors will just always say, roll it out. Not just advisors, but any big...
almost every institution.
Yeah, they all have programs and ads, roll your 401k to here, and make it seem like it's always the right thing to do.
And it's not always the right thing to do. It is sometimes.
But it's not always.
Not always.
Anyway, we'll talk about that. And, of course, take your calls, answer your questions. And if you want to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, and, quite frankly, who would not... Yes. Want to be part of this program.
Claim to fame.
You can call us at 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-2-HANSON. The Hansons for the Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Hanson. H-A-N-S-O-N. When, for the longest time, my kids thought the name of my firm was Handsome McLean.
Well, I get that often.
Yeah.
Yeah, Handsome. Not Handsome McLean.
Handsome McLean. And, you know, speaking of kids, you know.
You're the handsome one? Is that the deal?
Yeah, speaking of kids, you know it's summer. Twice this week, I called home to talk to my wife about something during the middle of the workday. And I said, what are you doing? She said, I'm trying to get the kids out of bed.
Trying to get them out of bed?
It's summer. They're
Why
teenagers.
Why is she trying to get them out of bed?
She's got things. You can't sleep all day. You got a list of things to do.
That's hilarious.
Sleep all day?
I don't care. I figure it's not going to make any difference in their life.
Oh, no, we try to get them up. Give them a list. What we find is if you give them a list of things when they're around the house, they have a tendency to figure out how not to be around the house. By either going out and getting employment or doing something.
I just remember reading this book, Losing Control and Liking It.
You recommended that book
fantastic.
To me.
It's fantastic. It's a short read, but so much of it is these things you struggle with when you're raising teenagers. After a couple of years, they're going to be out of the house. Problem solved.
I started reading that book and couldn't finish it because it did not allow
me. No pictures?
It didn't allow me to exercise my will.
No big pictures. Paint by numbers.
It looked like I was giving up a little bit too much control.
Oh, that's what it comes down to. Anyway, this is a financial program, and we know we spend a lot of time on retirement planning issues.
We absolutely do.
That's a big issue for people. The fact is.
And for most people, it's their second largest asset.
Well, the retirement plan in general, if you think about retirement, most people retire earlier than they would have planned. And depending on which study you look at, it's greater than 50% of people retire at an age earlier than they would have planned otherwise. Two main factors for that. Factor number one, a health issue. Your health, the health of a loved one, a health issue causes you to retire earlier than you would have liked. So that's one major factor. The second is a change in the workplace environment. And it might be that your company has decided to move your office to some other state. We see that often. It's being moved. Either you move or you lose your job.
It could be a realignment where you have been reassigned to a different division that you're not happy with. And you're close to retirement, so you just pull the plug.
Realignment. It's like a fancy term for
reorganization. It's realignment.
Getting fired. It's been a realignment.
And then if people aren't necessarily fired. They're offered another position in a different. That's the realignment.
And sometimes we see people retire. They've been doing the same job for 34 years, and suddenly there's a new manager who's a 28-year-old recent NBA grad or something that's driving them bananas. And they're like, I know I was planning on sticking around another 4 years.
We see that fairly often.
I can't do it anymore. So anyway, so we're going to talk some about retirement during this program. We're talking about kids as well, because trying to pay for your kids' education is often another big issue that people are considering. So we look at 529 plans.
And other ways to save for retirement.
So again, if you want to join the program, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And or you can also go to our website, moneymatters.com, and shoot us a question that way through moneymatters.com. So let's go to the calls here. Let's talk to Marissa. Marissa, you're live with Hanson McLean.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful. How are you, Marissa?
Doing great. So my question, my husband and I opened up individual SEP IRAs this year with TD Ameritrade.
Okay.
And we own our own company, and we are the only employees. And our CPA recommended us to open up the SEP IRAs for tax purposes.
Is this the first year you've opened the SEP? You've never had a SEP before?
I've never had a SEP.
Okay.
No. And it was to apply for the most recent tax year, 2014.
Okay.
And so he had said that we needed to file the 5500 EZ form by this July, and that he doesn't file this form for us, and neither does TD Ameritrade.
How much money did you put in the SEP?
Only $5,500 per account.
So why did you set up a SEP IRA versus just using a regular IRA?
Because my CPA recommended.
Okay, let me step back a little. So you and your husband both work for this, you're self-employed, you both work for the company?
Yes, we're both employees, and we both are owners of the company.
And how much do you pay yourselves?
Like $50,000.
And do you have any employees?
No, we're the only employees.
How old are you?
34.
And what was the profit of the company last year? Do you know yet?
The gross income or net?
No, what you had to report on the on your tax return.
Did you say net? Sorry.
Yeah. Net.
I think around $80,000.
Was that inclusive of the money that you each took as pay, or was that in addition to $50,000 each in salary you've taken out?
So that was our net. So factoring in our payroll.
Okay, so you've got yourself on payroll.
Yeah. So essentially the company did about $180,000.
In gross?
Net.
Oh, in net. Well,
and then here's what we're trying to figure out. Let's pretend you didn't pay yourself a salary.
Okay.
Was there $180,000 in profits of which you guys could each pay each other $50,000 and then have $80,000 left over?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So here's a couple questions I have before we're going to answer your question.
Okay.
I question why you are both on payroll at $50,000 versus one or the other, because you're paying more into Social Security taxes this way than you would have to otherwise. You've got self-employment tax, which the FICA portion maxes out at 118.
And all that income flows through for that anyway. You're an S corporation or sole prop, right? Or sole proprietor?
Yeah, we're an S corp.
So this is an interesting,
if it were me and my wife, I'd say, honey, either one of us should have the majority of the income. The other one should be on the payroll for maybe $10,000 a year just to put us into Social Security and enable us to contribute to a retirement plan. Hmm. You're paying more into Social Security than you need to.
Okay.
Yeah, because of the fact that one of you is over the limit for Social Security. And then the second thing I would question is why you didn't just do an IRA if the contribution was only $5,500 because it's easier than a SEP? Or why didn't you just do what they call a solo K, which is a 401K, which is a solo K, which has much broader limits than the SEP?
I know my CPA had said, you know, with the 401k, I'm not familiar with a solo K, but I was hesitant about doing a 401k because of the administration.
How old is your CPA?
probably 36.
Really?
Yeah.
You were thinking he's either very young or very old, Pat?
Yeah, I thought he might be like 70 because the SEPs are so,
don't have to file a 5500 with the SEP. That's the thing about them. There's no annual filing on them.
The assets get over $250,000.
No, that's on solo case. Solo case.
Okay.
Because I was reading the IRS form instructions on how to file since I wasn't getting much help. So I read the directions, and it says if your assets don't exceed over $250,000, you don't have to file.
Yeah, and that's for the solo K, and I could be wrong here, but that's for the solo K.
I think
a SEP IRA, you don't need to file.
So,
but why would you even do a SEP IRA if they're going to do?
Yeah, so here's the. There's two things I question. One, which is why you didn't open a solo K to begin with, rather than the SEP and the or just a plain IRA. And the other is why are you both on payroll at the same level?
Okay.
Yeah, and we're actually approaching a break here. We're gonna take a break for news. But you know, we want to hold you on because I actually think we're gonna give you a couple steps that we think you should consider doing. Obviously,
okay.
You have a successful business. Some things that'll get you pointed in the right direction. So hold on through the break, and we'll get back with you in just a moment. If you want to join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Are you as confident as you should be when it comes to your finances? Do you feel that you're on track to accomplish your goals? If not, you owe it to yourself to take a look at Hanson McLean Advisors. Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, hosts of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, founded Hanson McLean Advisors over 20 years ago to help people make wise choices with their money. The approach taken by Hanson McLean Advisors is one of financial planning, meaning the advisors take the time with each client to help map out a strategy before they offer any solutions. Their fee-based investment accounts are designed to be transparent and liquid, so you never have to guess what's going on under the hood. And there are no commissions when products are changed or when rebalances take place. Plus, unlike many investment firms, there is a high level of communication keeping you informed and up to date. With offices in Northern California, come and see how Hanson McLean Advisors can be of benefit to you. Contact them at 1-888-2-HANSON or moneymatters.com. That's moneymatters.com.
Back to one of the longest running financial programs. Here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Glad you are taking part of your weekend and joining us as we talk about finances, trying to help people make wise choices with their money and wise choices with their retirement and everything else along those lines. And to be part of the program, 888-2-HANSON will get you on, and we could take your call. Or you can go to moneymatters.com and send us a question that way. And we are talking with Marissa. Marissa, you still with us?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so kind of just back up. So Marissa and her husband have a business. You put yourself on payroll of each $50,000 a year through a payroll service, and you had net income of an additional $80,000 on top of that.
And you're an S corporation, so that all flows through. Unless you're taking it, are you taking any as dividend?
Yeah, we do shareholder distribution as well.
Okay. And so the accountant recommended a SEP and then said you should file a 5500 form. I'm trying to remember. So Scott and I have been in business together for almost 2 years?
23 years.
When we first started, we had a couple of employees 23 years ago, and we had a SEP plan. I can't.
We had a profit sharing plan.
Oh, we did?
Yes, sir. Before we had a 401k.
But I can't remember.
So
us
let me
ever
ask you this, Marissa. How much money would you guys like to save and take a tax deduction? Is that kind of the maximum, 11 grand right now? Which is fine. I'm just trying to figure that out.
Yeah, we usually target around, I mean, we've in the past couple of years have had, Roth IRAs and IRAs. This is the first time we've done SEP IRAs. So typically we try and for each of us put around 5,500 to 6,000.
So if your goal is to put 5,500 a year in, first of all, you don't need a SEP. You can just use a regular IRA.
Yeah, I don't remember the reason as to why he told us about the SEP. I think he was trying to get the income down on the corporation so we'd pay less taxes through that, I guess. I know
it's not going to make any difference there. It's not going to make any difference as the owners of the company.
Disturbing to me is that he wouldn't file the 5500 for you.
Which isn't required. But I know you're stuck in Never Never Land. Your accountant tells you to do one thing and then doesn't help you.
But most accountants, if you're an accountant and you disagree with me on a SEP form, I think most accountants would go ahead and file that form for their clients, would they not?
Or I would think so.
Yeah, I would think so. I don't know.
First of all, it's not required.
The role for the PCA,
there's poor advice on there.
Yeah.
And then you went to your broker, and your broker said, we don't do it. But your broker didn't also say, it's not necessary. It's not necessary. You don't have to worry about it. You just set by IRA,
and
you don't have to
and you verified that, Marissa, by looking up the code yourself.
Yeah, I read the directions myself.
Okay, so here's the thing that I question. One is, either do an IRA or a solo K. Don't mess with the SEP. And the reason is the 401k or the solo K, once it's established, you can put money in or not put money in, but it's got greater limits on it.
Okay.
And because it has greater limits and the plan documentation isn't much more than a SEP, what it does is...
You have to file 5500 easy when your assets exceed 250.
So, but it's not much. What it does is give you more flexibility in the future.
And you could establish this by December. You would need to establish it by December 31st of this year, but you have until the time you file your taxes next year to fund it for this year.
So the point being is that looking out 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, you're probably going to want to possibly exceed the limit that a SEP allows you to put in. And a 401k allows that. And it's no more expensive.
Now
and it isn't any more difficult.
Unless you think you're going to have employees in the future.
Well, that's the thing with the SEP IRA. My understanding is if you are the employees and the only ones, that's fine. But as soon as you hire employees, you do have to contribute.
That's right.
That's
same percentage. Yeah. If you're putting 10% of your pay in, you got to put 10% of their
pay. But the 401ks and the SEP IRAs don't differ much between those two in terms of the qualification for the employees.
Yeah.
So I would just start with the 401k.
Or I wouldn't do anything until you want to save more than $5,500.
That's probably better advice.
I wouldn't bother with the SEP. I wouldn't bother with any of this stuff unless you were going to contribute more than $11,000 between the two of you. And I would look at it and have, instead of having you both the same income level, I would change it up. I'd really have a big focus on trying to reduce that Social Security tax as much as possible.
Which means,
And then what's considered? Well, that's the question. For tax filing, you don't want a red flag saying, okay, well, you're on payroll, but your salary is so low, but you're the main.
Well, are you both the main people?
No, my husband is in the sales.
And
he's the main producer.
And how much do you both work there, 40 hours a week?
No, I'm only part-time, like 10 hours a week.
But you make the same amount as he does.
Mm-hmm.
You just answered your own question.
Right.
Right? You just answered your own question.
I would put myself on minimum. I'd put myself on minimum wage. Look, if you want more money, it's your business. You can have more money come to you. But as far as the question is how much you can say this is actually a dividend from the corporation, you're going to have a tough time when there's two individuals in the company, no other employees, unless you've got some sort of recurring revenue that you can prove that exists that's not tied to the labor of the two of you. I think you're probably having a tough time
Proving the fact that it's
any
dividend,
of it's not,
not
subject to self-employment tax, which would be all the more reason you'd want to have your husband as the primary primary person on payroll subject to the FICA tax and you just being a nominal amount. That's
so let's get to the end.
General.
Let's get to the end. Let's get to the end. What, Scott, what would be the main thing that you would recommend to Marissa? Mine would be to shop accountants.
Oh, yeah. That was the first thing I thought.
Okay.
That would be mine, which is, these are probably the conversations. You've never met us before. You probably listened to us on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
But we're really smart.
No, but we're not accountants. We're not accountants. But you're calling a call-in talk show for a tax question regarding your company.
Because you're accountant.
Because you had no trust in your accountant's advice.
His advice was, that's why I told you to go to a financial advisor.
Well, so that's not the right
answer.
But
a financial advisor is not going to do the $5,500 for you either.
Right. So.
So, Marissa.
But you don't need to do the $5,500.
So, Scott and I, like I said earlier, we've been in business for 23 years. We have gone through
a few CPAs over
there. CPAs.
Yeah, we've been on the same one for a number of years.
Now we have. Yes, absolutely. But when we first started, we went through the first one in about 3 years because we realized the advice wasn't appropriate.
Yes, we did. Made everything very overly complicated.
And he was a great guy. I like the guy, actually. But he made things.
And the challenge is when you're starting out, I mean, it's a lot of money to spend on accounting. When you're thinking, oh, my gosh, it's hard enough to get the revenue in. I don't want to spend a bunch of money on accounting. And oftentimes you find accountants on that aren't that expensive. And sometimes you
get what you pay for.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Okay.
All right. Good luck,
all
Marissa.
Right. And the good thing is you've got plenty of time to shop for an accountant.
Yes, I know.
Don't worry about the $5,500. We had a long time with Marissa.
Well, thank you. She seemed like a lovely person. And congratulations on your business. 35, 36 years of age. husband,
and
wife.
How many times do we see when there's like a husband and wife like that are both on payroll? They're both paying.
Often.
Whether you're on payroll or not, it's still FICA tax. You own the business.
But it depends if someone's making above the limits. It's a question that should be answered.
Yeah.
If you're a mom and pop or boyfriend and girlfriend or whatever.
Yeah.
If you're domiciled in the same place and you run your own business, then you should actually look at how the Social Security tax is being paid.
888-2-HANSON to join the show. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. We're talking with David. David, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, yeah, good morning. I'm a retired 100% disabled vet, and I'm 59, and I'm unemployable for my medical situation. And in my retirement, I started my own home-based business that's, you know, that I do. And but my wife is a teacher. She just turned 60. And I'm concerned. I'm wondering about. I keep getting questions from my neighbors when I talk to them about their Social Security and stuff like that. Is about my being eligible for it, and should I be, you know, how would that affect my wife's, or how would that affect me if I, you know?
So, are you on Social Security disability?
No.
Have you applied for Social Security disability?
No.
Well, you say you've got a home-based business. How much are you earning from your home-based business?
Well, I averaged about $10,000 in my first 2 years, and now I'm about double that now already.
So $20,000 a year.
Yeah, and I have with the potential of making even more, because I've already made that essentially by now. This is May, so I've already made that by now.
$20,000 so far this year.
Yeah.
Wow, good for you. Good for you, David.
It's pretty lucrative. I don't even advertise. It's all word of mouth. Because I don't want to advertise, because if I get more business than I can handle, then I have to say no to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, if you ever say no to to a potential customer, you'll never see him again, sort of thing. So so that's why I'm moderating things that I can handle.
So you'll be eligible under your own Social Security, because the challenge with your wife, she's a teacher. So if she qualifies for Social Security, her Social Security is going to be subject to the windfall elimination provision, which essentially says you can't double dip. So if you participate in Social Security before you became a teacher, and I'm assuming she works for it, she doesn't pay into Social Security. Is that right? She's covered under STIRS. So because she's a teacher covered under STIRS, she's going to receive a pension from STIRS, and her Social Security is going to be reduced dramatically.
Right.
Qualify under your own Social Security.
And you're paying taxes and payroll taxes on your income now?
Well, I'm filing as a sole proprietor.
Okay. All right. So it's not under the table. That was a nice way of me asking that you're actually declaring income on this.
No. I file. I have a Board of Equalization, all that.
Okay.
I have
a
permit and all that.
So I guess I'm still not certain what your question is.
I mean, would I be eligible for Social Security?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Right now, I mean, you know, so.
Oh,
well,
now
you have 40. Have you contributed 40? You have 40 quarters of a work history with Social Security, essentially 10 years that you've been paying into Social Security.
Well, I've been I was active duty for 23 years.
Okay, yeah, but
he's got income. He's got a job.
Yeah, well, you can't get Social Security now. You're not
old enough.
Yeah.
First of all, you're 59 and a half, right? Is that what you said?
Right.
And so, if you didn't have a job and you were in fact 100% disabled, you could apply for Social, but you're not. You have a job.
Working for myself. I'm just not employable by.
But it's a job. You pay payroll taxes.
Okay.
Which is better for you, frankly, than being on Social Security disability. You're getting more income doing what you're doing.
Yeah. So you pay payroll taxes, which means you have a job. They don't really care what the job is. You work for yourself, but you still work.
Okay.
The Social Security tax you're paying in now will help your Social Security when you go to retire.
That's correct. So if you called and said, I'm making $2,000 a year and I'm struggling and I'm on 100% disabled, my question would have been, well, why didn't you file for Social Security disability? But while you may be 100% disabled in terms of what the veteran views you, the Social Security Administration would not view you 100% disabled due to the fact that you
you're
make
working.
Money.
Yeah.
You've got a job.
But this is good.
I got a pension from military pension, too. So.
That's correct. You've got a disability pension. Yeah, so just work as long as you can, the better off you are. And when you talk to your neighbors.
And you will get your own Social Security. And it won't be your spousal benefit from your wife's would not be nearly as beneficial to you as your own.
Than staying on. So when your neighbor, and you said your neighbors bring it up, from now on, just keep the topic on the drought. Find the easiest thing to talk about my neighbors with.
Oh, my lawn's looking terrible.
I have a neighbor who's going out on disability, and he was questioning why wasn't I.
Because you're working. Be glad you're working.
David, because you have a job.
It's much better.
That's why. That's why. Remember, good neighbors, good fences. That's my motto.
Hey, David. Yeah. Glad you called. Enjoyed the rest of the weekend, and congrats on your...
You guys are awesome. Have a great day.
Oh, thank congrats you, David. On your home
and,
base
and thank
business.
You for your service to the country.
Absolutely. Really greatly appreciate that. We're going to take a quick break. Hey, we still have some time to take a couple calls. 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-2-HANSON. You're listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To join the show, call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766.
You hear Scott Hanson and Pat McClain each weekend as they host Hanson McClain's Money Matters. And if you're not yet a client of Hanson McClain Advisors, you really ought to give them a shot. You see, the same type of straightforward financial advice that is provided during the show is what the clients of Hanson McClain Advisors receive on a regular basis. The approach of Hanson McClain Advisors is to first listen to you and then help come up with a plan to provide a greater chance of success in achieving your financial goals. Goals that range from retirement planning to debt elimination to income solutions. Hanson McClain Advisors is not simply a store that sells one type of product. No, Hanson McClain Advisors is an independent advisory firm that pick from a wide variety of financial products. They use investment tools from well-known brand names, in addition to financial products from lesser-known boutique shops, all with the objective to help you meet your financial goals. So if you have yet to see how the commission-free programs of Hanson McClain Advisors can benefit you, contact them today at 1-888-2-HANSON or visit them at moneymatters.com.
Taking the financially complex and making it simple. It's Hanson McClain's Money Matters at 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McClain. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad you stuck through the bottom half of the program and here in their second half hour of Hanson McClain's Money Matters, which we've been doing this program for almost 20 years. Broadcasting out of Northern California, newer to the Bay Area. So KGO listeners, we've been on KGO just a couple months.
In the Sacramento area, 20 years.
Almost 20 years.
Yeah, long time.
Yeah. Anyway, so beginning of the program, we want to talk about retirement plans and
it's some of the so complicated.
And when to roll over, when not to roll over.
It's so complicated.
It's complicated. I mean, think about it. We had a call earlier in the program on the SEP IRA.
She had three choices. Actually, she had more than three choices, but she had three viable choices.
It is bizarre. It is really bizarre, our retirement system in the United States. Forget the fact that whether or not here's what's bizarre about it. You want to contribute some money to a retirement plan, right? You want to save. You've heard that it's important to save. Your options can range from, just regular savings where you don't get any sort of tax break. But if you want a tax break for a retirement plan, your options are an IRA, unless your income goes too high, then you might not get the tax deduction on that, right?
Right.
So an IRA, unless your income's too high.
A deductible IRA. A non-deductible IRA.
Yeah, your income's too high, you don't get the tax deduction. So you got the traditional IRA, a non-deductible IRA. There's the Roth IRA. Unless your income's too high, then you can't contribute to the Roth IRA.
But you could do a contribution to a non-deductible IRA and then convert it to a Roth IRA.
Yes, maybe. If you have a spouse that doesn't work, you have a spousal IRA. Unless your income's too high, you lose the ability to do a spousal IRA as well. How about through my employer? Well, your employer... You'd have a 401k plan. You also might have a Roth 401k. If you are a teacher or work for a nonprofit, you may have a 403b available to you, perhaps even a Roth 403b. If you work for a municipality, you may have a 457 available to you in addition to a 401k, perhaps. You might
if you work for an employer that has a few highly paid employees and a lot of lower paid employees, you have a plan that may have top heavy rules that limit the amount of money that you could actually put into it.
If you're self-employed, you want to have a retirement plan. Well, again, you can just do like a traditional IRA, like we talked about before, or you can set up a SEP IRA or a KEO plan.
So,
or a SAR SEP.
So let's step back
for
one
simple IRA.
Let's step back for one. And by the way, this is
profit sharing plan, age weighted profit sharing plan.
And all this stuff is good for accountants and people like us.
You know, but in both, yeah, absolutely.
Because it's complicated. I mean, so I have a fairly good understanding of how retirement plans work, but we have a specialist in our office that only does retirement plans. That's all he does.
Because it gets complicated.
Because it's so
complicated. Well, he heads up the team, that's all that they do.
Yeah, correct. But it's so complicated that we have specialists that if people ask a very in-depth question about a 401k, we go to that team in our organization. Yes. Why isn't that?
As a certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant, I can't even keep up with
why that. Is it that we just couldn't put a plan together that says everyone can put up to $20,000 a year into the IRA?
Or whatever the number is.
Whatever the number is, and that's it, and it's not through your employer, and it has nothing to do with your employer, and...
Pat, you think about this. Let's say you and your brother are both engineers, right?
Mm-hmm.
You work for a large engineering firm that has a 401k plan, so you're allowed to contribute $17,500, well, because you're over age 50, barely, you can contribute up to $23,000 a year. Your brother works for a small startup engineering firm.
Okay.
That does not have a 401k.
So he cannot contribute as much as I can to his retirement.
You're contributing $23,000. He's limited on $5,500 plus another $1,000 catch-up, $6,500 a year. You could be doing the exact same job. Now, think if his income gets to, if he didn't participate in a, if his employer didn't offer a retirement plan, he can contribute to an IRA regardless of his limit. But the income limit.
I'm getting confused.
The fact is, he's stuck at $6,500. You've got $23,000 that you can contribute.
We're both engineers who make the same amount of money.
Yeah, both engineers, both in the same. He's penalized because he works for a startup that doesn't offer 401k.
Well, one of the issues that we will see going forward is that smaller companies will have less offerings of retirement plans because of the changes in the fiduciary rule right now. Because companies are being sued over their 401ks by their employees.
Yes.
They don't get sued for not offering them.
We saw Fidelity got sued by its employees. We saw Southern California Edison International.
Ameriprise
was sued. You see, these companies are sued by the employees for their 401k plans. And the companies are like, oh, for crying out loud.
So if you were a smaller company, you don't get sued for not offering them. You just get sued for offering one that doesn't follow all the rules.
Well, maybe it does follow the rules. Maybe it could have been a little bit better.
Yes.
The rules have changed. So it's interesting that we've got this retirement structure as it is. I've actually written some opinion pieces on simplifying the process. And why not just allow everyone to contribute a certain dollar amount? Whether it's through your employer or not through your employer? What's the difference?
Well, let's look at the history of employee benefits. Why is health insurance offered by your employer? Because the wage...
Well, they're not. That's going away, too.
Because the wage freezes after World War II.
Yeah, good. It's, yeah.
Right? So what happened is after World War II, they had wage freezes. So if you were competing with the same employee because of this environment, you were competing with the same employee and you couldn't offer any more wages and you were afraid you were going to lose an employee to another firm, what do? You start adding other benefits. It's the same reason that tech companies add suites of goods such as restaurants on campus and dry cleaning and healthcare and childcare is because there are packages that make the employer more attractive to the employee. That was how health insurance came about. And then that's how company-sponsored pension plans came about. Defined contribution plans came about.
Yeah.
Defined benefit plans came about because of if you look at the history of the unions, in the United States is because of the retirement benefit plan came about because of the unions on large major corporations. specifically the auto industry.
So it's, right now it's a mess. I think it was Bush came out with some sort of lifetime something. He came out with some plan, $7,000. I forget what it was. And I don't remember if Obama did his first term or not. But no, there's never been...
Well, Obama, the Obama administration came out with one for low-income savers.
Yes.
Which didn't make any sense at all, because the reality is...
If you're making $20,000 a year and you've got a kid at home, you're not saving for retirement.
As much as you have the desire to, there are so many competing forces for those monies.
Just like you're not buying organic food either. I mean, you're trying to survive at that income level. Anyway, so... That's kind of it is really a mess. But if you're leaving your employer, you've got a 401k, which is oftentimes, there are times that make sense to roll into an IRA and times when it makes sense to leave it where it is. Most financial advisors are going to say, roll into 401k. They say that because, frankly, they have an economic interest to roll the 401k into an IRA.
And sometimes it's great for you. Sometimes you need that type of management.
But there, the times you might want to consider leaving it where it is, here's a biggie. If you leave your workforce and you're between the ages of 55 and 59 and a half, if you leave the money in your employer's plan, the 401k or 403b, 457, you've got access to those dollars without being 59 and a half. You don't have to worry about the 10% early withdrawal rule for not being 59 and a half. You've got access to it. Once it goes into an IRA, it's locked to 59 and a half. All right. So if you're 55 or older, when you leave your job, you roll the money to an IRA, it's locked to 59 and a half. If you leave it where it's at, you've got access to it. So oftentimes from a planning standpoint, we'll recommend, look, why don't you leave some money, if not all the money, in your 401k, even though you might want to roll it to an IRA because of the flexibility.
And in a 457, if you separate service before the age of 59 and a half, regardless of your age in a deferred compensation plan, you may want to leave it there.
Now, also, if you've got a relatively smaller balance on your 401k, the options you have within the 401k might be your best solution, because you roll into some other financial product out there sold by some financial advisor. The fees may not be worth any benefits that you're going to receive.
And if you leave it in the 401k, if the account balance is, let's say, less than $10,000, you're not going to drive those fees up, and you typically will have a broad menu. The problem there is you're not going to get financial advice on it.
But if it's a small plan, you're not going to be able to hire a decent advisor.
Unless the plan offers financial advice, and more plans are offering financial advice, which I think is a great thing.
It's certainly better than no financial advice. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hit the phones again. 888-2-HANSON to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. You can also go to moneymatters.com, submit a question that way. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We'll be right back.
Can't always catch Money Matters on the radio each week? Get a podcast of the show delivered to your device every week. Visit moneymatters.com.
Are you as confident as you should be when it comes to your finances? Do you feel that you're on track to accomplish your goals? If not, you owe it to yourself to take a look at Hanson McLean Advisors. Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, hosts of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, founded Hanson McLean Advisors over 20 years ago to help people make wise choices with their money. The approach taken by Hanson McLean Advisors is one of financial planning, meaning the advisors take the time with each client to help map out a strategy before they offer any solutions. Their fee-based investment accounts are designed to be transparent and liquid, so you never have to guess what's going on under the hood. And there are no commissions when products are changed or when rebalances take place. Plus, unlike many investment firms, there is a high level of communication keeping you informed and up to date. With offices in Northern California, come and see how Hanson McLean Advisors can be of benefit to you. Contact them at 1-888-2-HANSON or moneymatters.com. That's moneymatters.com.
Advice without an agenda. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Thanks for being part of the program on this great weekend.
Appreciate it.
888-2-HANSON to join us.
Or 916-921-1530. So the conversation we just had in the last part about the 401ks and 457s and 403bs. Lots of information there. If you want to read a couple articles, we've got some videos on our website at moneymatters.com. Moneymatters.com is our informational website that kind of provides you.
It'll take you to Money Matters You and to HansenMcLean.com.
It's a good portal. It's where we take what we think are relevant questions, what we're hearing a lot of, and then we post either videos or questions to those answers. And things come in waves. Right now, the wave
I had a conversation yesterday. I interrupted you on purpose.
That's okay. Thank you. Because we've been partners for 23 years.
I knew where you were going. I was interviewed yesterday from a reporter. I forget what newspaper he wrote for.
Do they have any readers? That's the biggest question.
I think Newsday. I think it was Newsday.
Okay.
It's a big paper. But his questioning wanted to go to the radio program that we've been doing for 20 years, which I thought was interesting. And he asked me this specifically, have you noticed that calls have changed over the years? As people enter retirement today, are the questions different today than they were 20 years ago? And they kind of go in waves based upon the economy. So,
but they haven't changed substantially. They just go through waves.
They go through waves.
But when
people still want to try to figure out, look, can I be able to afford, how do I get from my workplace to retirement? How much money do I need to set aside? How do I do that? What's the best way to do it? Now I'm going to retirement. How do I best transition through this process? What do I need to worry about? What do I not need to focus on? Once I'm retired, how do I get income? Do I take it from my 401k? Do I take it from my brokerage account? Do I keep that rental house? All those different things.
And a lot of
those questions haven't really changed. That's as a financial advisors at a Hanson McLean, our firm, these are the issues that we've been dealing with for more than 20 years. Those things haven't changed.
What does change are the questions of any one asset. So when gold's going really well, we get the questions of, should I buy this? Or when it's doing really, really poorly, it's, should I sell this? When real estate was doing really, really well, it was, should I buy this? When it was doing poorly, should I sell this? And if they could only switch those two. If people would say,
only want to buy when things are down.
I should buy when it's down and sell when it's up. But anyway, that's the history of the show. But if you have questions, in case you were curious, if you have questions, you can go to moneymatters.com and you can actually ask us a question by typing it to us.
That's right.
On our website. Or you can join the show at 888-2-HANSEN.
And let's go back to the calls, talk with Dennis. Dennis, you're with Hanson McLean.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thank you, Dennis.
Other than Social Security and an IRA, about July 1st, I'm going to the first time start drawing from a couple of different portfolios that I have.
Okay.
One portfolio was set up strictly for dividend income, and it's full of preferreds and ETFs and secured debt.
Okay.
And a few core stocks. The other portfolio was strictly for growth. And income portfolio is producing about 6% right now, and the growth portfolio, the estimated CAGR is 5 years is 14%. Finally, the question. As I start to draw down on those, my intention was to draw just the income from the dividend portfolio each year, and only the gain on the growth portfolio, provided there is any gain.
And yeah. And how much do you have in your IRA, approximately?
That's totally separate.
You're taking income required minimum distributions off of that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the standard Social Security. And this question really is for the benefit of my wife. I'm 85. My wife is 70.
Okay.
So we're not. I haven't got that much time left anyway. I'm concerned about taking from the growth income, which I think is probably dubious between now and the end of the year, with how much growth there actually will be.
So, Dennis, obviously you are quite a sophisticated investor. You throw out a term like Kager. Most of the people don't know what you're talking about.
I don't either, really.
That's good. But no, I mean, you do though. And you obviously a lot of research, the way you have a strategy, right? You've developed a strategy, might not be the strategy that we would employ, but you have a certain strategy that you've been doing it, and it's obviously been working for you. And we'll get to your question. My bigger question, and only as financial advisors, we sit down oftentimes with widows. My bigger question is, particularly with the age difference between, what provisions have you made for your spouse when you end up passing away or get to the point where you can no longer do these strategies, for her to be able to continue on with her retirement income?
So, and that's either I take a portfolio that is much more passive and I build it so that there doesn't a lot of decision making, and then I tell her, hey, don't really mess with this.
Well, 15-year difference, though, that you can't.
Or I go out and get a financial advisor that I trust, or I get a family member that I trust that is intelligent enough that they can actually manage that. Do you have an advisor that you work with?
I do not, and whatever I have learned and whatever strategy I have, she is parallel to that and up on it.
And she understands it all.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. That is great. That is great. You are the rare exception.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's the women that manage the portfolio, and sometimes it's the men, but very rarely are both of them
that's
consistently
right.
involved.
Usually one person's making the decision and the other person. Like a lot of things in marriage, oh, if you do that, good. I'm not going to worry about it because that's your responsibility. I'm going to worry about these other issues. And so,
but if you don't spread it out, then you've got the widow that you want to talk to.
What you don't want is the widow to come in and be stressed because the worst thing is
we see it all the time.
Anyway, so here's
we see someone that they haven't been involved and they don't have a relationship with a financial advisor, so they don't have that trust level that's been so that's the kind of thing that we see oftentimes. So
back to your question, you need the income?
Yes.
Okay.
Starting July 1st.
Oh, got it. So there's
what percentage, if you put these two portfolios together, what percentage draw do you need from this dollar amount?
As a percentage?
And are you planning, you said this, the growth portfolio, you're anticipating that the companies are going to grow at 14% a year. Is your plan to take 14% a year income off that piece?
No, the plan would be to take only the growth.
But what about the down years?
That's one of my questions.
Yeah. Okay. So here's what.
Assuming there's down years and no growth, there's no income.
That is correct. So what happens is it's feast or famine.
I get the principle.
You're correct. It's either feast or famine. So what you're trying to do is to set up a withdrawal strategy, and what's allowed you to manage these dollars in your mind pretty efficiently, which is, hey, I've got this dividend producing here, which is, I think, going to be pretty consistent, and I'm going to allow this other stuff in this pot to grow, so if it's volatile, it's not going to bother me. So in your mind, you've segmented these things, which is whatever works.
That's right.
Whatever
and
works.
That's worked for you, obviously.
And it's worked great. There's two things that – what's that?
That's why I couldn't look at this, frankly, with the whole lot as one portfolio.
That is correct.
I separated the two so I could deal with each one individually as a separate thing.
So here's the thing that I would look at. One is, I think that your 6%, if you're saying that the dividend portfolio right now is producing 6%, that's
yes.
a little bit rich for me. I think that you might have a little bit more risk in there than you may think, or maybe you don't.
Well, tell me about how do you feel about the preferreds and the ETFs and secured debt?
They make me nervous when the interest rates go up.
Yeah. And anything that's that high, right? If you look at, so go and look and see what Apple is issuing shares at, or interest rates at right now.
Nothing.
When they're bonds, right?
Almost about the same.
Look at the 10-year treasury, which is a little bit over 2%. So the further you get away from that yield on a 10-year, the higher the risk is.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter whether it's a preferred or
secured.
Because
companies are not going to pay any more than they have to.
It doesn't matter what it is. Or an ETF, it makes no difference whether it's a secured bond or not a secured bond. The further you get away from that 2% on a 10-year, on an average maturity of 10 years, the more risk you have in the portfolio.
Would your comments be any different, keeping with the preferreds, ETFs, secured debt, and what have you, if you knew that their no call date earlier than 5 years or later than 5 years?
None. It wouldn't change. It wouldn't actually change it. And the reason is this, because as a preferred, actually, the prices fluctuate based on that. So that's the one thing that kind of worries me about that. I think that what I would do is I'd look at an overall portfolio and I'd withdraw about 5%, maybe 6%. And how you break that up is how you're comfortable with. So if there's $500,000 in this, the most I would use is a 6% distribution between the two, and I might take three and three.
Without looking at the other pieces, it's kind of
But he's not going to tell us, Scott. He doesn't want to.
But so here's the thing on that growth piece. You're better off just saying, here's the dollar amount I'm going to withdraw each year. If I'm expecting the portfolio to grow at 6 or 8% a year for the next 10 years, I'm going to withdraw that amount each year. Some years it's going to be way up. Some years it's going to be down. Otherwise, what'll happen, you have a great year, and you're like, whoa, party time. And then the next year, you've got nothing to take, and it just doesn't make any sense.
And that was my point. So if you've got $500,000 in this portfolio, 6% distribution is $30,000 a year or $2,500 a month, you decide what you want to draw it from. And I'd probably do 50-50 on the portfolio, assuming it's 50-50. Appreciate the call. We're running out of time there,
that'd
Dennis.
That'd be the way I'd be looking
call
at
Call us back
things.
Anytime, though.
Yeah, but he clearly has a strategy on this, which is good.
So. Which is good.
And most people need a strategy. And the reason we come here each week is to help you think about some of your own strategies, whether you build your portfolios yourself, you use an advisor. It's always good to have a good understanding of what that strategy is. And, of course, Hanson McLean, we're here every Saturday, same time on this very station. You could also get a podcast of this program. Go to moneymatters.com. You can sign up for our podcast. It'll be delivered to you each and every week right into your little mobile device or however you want to receive it. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.
You hear Scott Hanson and Pat McLean each weekend as they host Hanson McLean's Money Matters. And if you're not yet a client of Hanson McLean Advisors, you really ought to give them a shot. You see, the same type of straightforward financial advice that is provided during the show is what the clients of Hanson McLean Advisors receive on a regular basis. The approach of Hanson McLean Advisors is to first listen to you and then help come up with a plan to provide a greater chance of success in achieving your financial goals. Goals that range from retirement planning to debt elimination to income solutions. Hanson McLean Advisors is not simply a store that sells one type of product. No, Hanson McLean Advisors is an independent advisory firm that picks from a wide variety of financial products. They use investment tools from well-known brand names, in addition to financial products from lesser-known boutique shops, all with the objective to help you meet your financial goals. So if you have yet to see how the commission-free programs of Hanson McLean Advisors can benefit you, contact them today at 1-888-2-HANSON or visit them at moneymatters.com.